Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Andy Murray, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
So the US Open has come to an end. Catherine Whittaker and myself, David Lauren, are back in the UK, jet-lagged, napping every 10 minutes, but still keeping a very close eye on tennis as the Davis Cup weekend is about to take place and Carlos Ramos, who we've been talking about so much, is about to umpire United States against Croatia over the weekend. Quite extraordinary set of circumstances, really quite ironic. And he was spotted today in conversation with Katrina Adams, who was so critical of him over the previous weekend. And so I've taken the opportunity and been lucky enough to speak to Enric Molina today, former chair umpire. He umpired the 2005 Men's US Open final between Roger Federer and Andre Agassi, the 2008 Australian Open Women's final between Maria Sharapova and Anna Ivanovic, also the 2010 Australian Open Men's Singles final, Roger Federer against Andy Murray, and also the 2012 Wimbledon men's singles final between Murray and Federer. So great experience Enric has had. Also 4 Davis Cup finals, a couple of Olympic finals. He was professional between 1997 and 2014. He was the head of officiating at the ITF for 3 years. So really, who better to speak to about the situation that Carlos Ramos found himself in, the measures he took, whether he, as a chair umpire himself, agrees with them? These are all the questions that I wanted to ask. So I was happy enough to be able to speak to Enric on the Tennis Podcast, which is brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Amazon Prime Video UK, who brought you the US Open and will be bringing you the Laver Cup over the weekend of 21st to the 23rd of September. They've got global streaming rights. 200 countries will have access to the Laver Cup on Amazon Prime Video. So do tune into that. But for now, here is Enric Molina on the Tennis Podcast. Well, Enric, it's lovely to have you here with us on the Tennis Podcast. You and I have known each other a long time, and this is the first time I've had a chance to speak to you officially, partly because back in the day when you were a chair umpire, you wouldn't have been allowed to speak on the record in this sort of way. And I imagine watching the events of the weekend, you would have, a lot would have been going through your mind. What, perhaps you could give us an idea what it was like to watch it unfold.
Of course, that's correct, and I'm glad that I'm able to speak with you again, but now on an unofficial status. Yeah, of course. You know, I watched it, and you know, and I followed a little bit the controversy from the weekend. I think it was, all in all, it was a very, very unfortunate situation. For that to happen on a Grand Slam final is unusual. And the fact that Serena, you know, as one of, if not the greatest champion, women champion, you know, of all time, playing home soil, you know, that made it even bigger. My view is that judging it from an officiating point of view, Carlos's job was immaculate, I have to say. It was really, both from a technical and I think a communication perspective, was an excellent job, I have to say, under very, very difficult circumstances. For me, and perhaps we're going to get into details later on, but for me, the sad thing was a couple of things. One, let's not forget that the events that happened overshadowed a great win, a fantastic story of a young woman winning her first Grand Slam title at 20 years old. It was a fantastic effort and a great story that the sport should be talking about instead of this controversy. So that's the number one issue I have. And number two was sad. I mean, it was a sad response, I think, by the governing bodies, not to support the excellent job of the umpire. So these for me are the two main issues of the events on Saturday.
Well, I think that's very well said. Very clear. Let's go into some detail now and go through these situations one at a time, and we'll also address the governing body's responses. But first of all, the initial warning was given for coaching.
Mm-hmm.
What was your view of the invoking of that rule, the application of that rule? Because I spoke to Patrick Mouratoglou straight after the match. He mm-hmm. he admitted he had made some signals. We saw them in video footage as well. Serena Williams suggested that she just didn't see them, that she, well, wasn't interested in receiving them and doesn't cheat, and therefore it wasn't coaching in her view. So what was your view? Was that a completely correct application of that rule?
Yeah, I mean, look, you rightly pointed out that the main issue of, you know, that triggered the rest of the event was that Serena took it as someone was saying, Carlos in this case, was saying that she was cheating. It was far from that. The umpire happened to see clear communication from the coach to the player. It doesn't really matter. I mean, in terms of the ruling, it doesn't really matter if the player received that message. But there was definitely a message confirmed by Patrick later on. There was a coaching message that was witnessed by the umpire. So the umpire really couldn't do anything else than going through the code of conduct. Now, I don't know. I haven't spoken with Carlos, of course, and I don't know if there was a prior communication. Sometimes, because I've heard, well, some views, former players, etc., that they said, oh, he was too harsh. The umpire should have given a soft warning first. I don't know if he did that. I don't know if he had an opportunity for that. There are times, and I remember very well when I was in the chair, there are times that you try to, in certain scenarios, not as clear as that one, because that was a clear-cut, a perfect example of coaching. In some cases, you can sort of exchange eye contact with a coach or with a player, but you also have to take into consideration the moment, how the player is going to react to that soft warning, because it can be a worse recipe than just issuing a code. It's not more than that. It was not more than that, a warning for coaching, a clear coaching admitted by Patrick. I mean, there has been also the debate about, oh, this is not right. Coaches should be allowed. And of course, they've been testing it for some time, and most recently at the US Open Qualies, as you know. But that's out of the question, the discussion. I mean, the umpire has to follow the rules that he has at the moment. So in that particular tournament, in that particular match, I mean, he followed the rules 100%. So I don't think there should be any debate. Particularly when the coach himself admitted that he was coaching, right?
When you say that sometimes you can give a soft warning in those sort of situations, I guess depending on the type of situation and the type of coaching going on, what would you do? Would you speak to the player, or do you have to go and speak to the coach and tell them not to do it?
It, there's no really a manual for that. I mean, you just, with your experience, you know, you try to, if you can, it's not mandatory to go through a soft warning to issue a code. Let's make that clear. But if you can, maybe you're not sure what's going on, you can have a word with the player, maybe at the changeover, during points, and particularly on that, this is one of the largest arenas, the biggest courts in the world, as you know. And very noisy. So it's very difficult to have a private conversation with the player. So maybe you can exchange some eye contact with the coach, if you know him well, if he's looking at you. So there's a lot of different options that you have. And to be honest with you, I don't know if Carlos had the opportunity to go down that route. But regardless, I think we have to make clear that it's not mandatory to issue a soft warning prior to a warning, an official warning.
Okay, so the second one was the racket smash, and mm-hmm. I think most people think that that was the most straightforward of the code violations. I don't think anybody was saying that that shouldn't have been given a code violation. There was some dispute as to whether Serena thought that she'd come to kind of an agreement with Carlos that no, she wasn't intending to get coached, and she thought that maybe he had decided against giving the code violation after they'd had that conversation. And then she seemed very shocked when she was docked a point. What was your take?
Yeah, I think Serena probably, I mean, when it happened, when the first situation, the coaching situation occurred, she was not probably aware of the potential consequences of that warning. So I don't know if it was clear in her mind that any other violation, the code of conduct, would result in a loss of a point. So when she smashed the racket, probably in her head, she thought, okay, it'll be a warning, because she knew that she got a warning prior to the racket abuse for the coaching. But because she was disputing it, you know, maybe, I don't know, she got confused. It was obviously the right sequence and the right actions taken by the umpire. There's no dispute about the racket abuse, for sure, but it's not really an argument. There's no room for negotiation between a player and a coach once a coach has been issued, right? So, and then, of course, the arguments, we'll probably get into that as well. I mean, the arguments were, in my opinion, completely out of the question because she was throwing in different things that were not really applying to that discussion. So I think she got confused, probably.
The third one was for verbal abuse, and there were a number of things said at the time. The two that, I mean, there was no foul language, there was no swearing. The two words that appear to have triggered the verbal abuse warning were calling Carlos a liar and calling him a thief for stealing a point from her. That then led to code violation, verbal abuse, game penalty. Is that in accordance with how you would have seen things if you had been in the chair as well?
Yeah, look, I think Carlos was right to issue the game penalty for verbal abuse. There was definitely the definition of verbal abuse is when a player, in this case, saying something directed, you know, abusive, of course, but directed at someone. In this case, you know, directed at the umpire. You are, you know, a liar, a thief. So that's a clear example of a verbal abuse. And if you ask me personally, I think questioning and accusing actually the umpire of being unfair, of lying, of stealing a match or a point or a game or whatever, it's probably one of the worst things that you can say to an umpire, because you're putting into question their fairness, their equality. It's really harsh, right? Yes, luckily there was no foul language, as you say. But there was a clear verbal abuse. It could have also been issued a code for unsportsmanlike conduct, because let's not forget, I mean, it's not just what she was saying, but the manner in she was saying it. And I think Carlos actually was quite patient and looking at the, I've watched the video a few times, obviously, out of interest, but it was, I think Carlos really tried to diffuse, you know, the situation and let Serena seem off. He wasn't talking too much or much at all, actually, during that changeover that led to the game penalty, because he wanted the player to calm down. Well, she didn't. It was her choice, actually. And she just, you know, she was still pointing, in my opinion, in a quite aggressive way to the umpire. So the whole conversation or discussion was really aggressive to the umpires. And that's also, you know, grounds for a code for unsportsmanlike conduct. He gave it for verbal abuse, which was technically also very correct. So I think there's not much to add to that, really.
In terms of the discussion over the soft warning, whether that could have been applied for the first one, one of the things that a lot of the ex-players have said is that they feel that the job of an umpire, or part of the job of an umpire, is to manage the match and make sure that it that it goes and in a way that is avoiding these sort of flare-ups and the and to diffuse situations. Do you agree with that?
I do agree in principle. Well, it's one of the responsibilities of the umpires to try and conduct the matches in the most smooth way. But it's not entirely up to the umpires. So, you know, they're not in control of the events. So, yes, I can do my best in the chair, you know, to try to calm you down. But if for some reason you don't want to, or you cannot, it's really out of my hands. So that's when the code of conduct comes into effect. That's a tool for the umpires to use to control the match. It's not to punish a player, but rather to control a match. And one thing that we tend to forget when it comes to these discussions is that there is also another player on the other side of the net that maybe she had different thoughts. I mean, we've gone through also unfortunately, at the US Open, we've gone through also a controversy over an umpire coaching a player, right? And we all agree that this is wrong. And so I think it's important to try and control the match with the tools you have, but it's not entirely up to the umpire. It's out of their hands to the end result. Okay, the player is the main actor there. So you do the best you can with the tools you have, also depending on the player's behavior.
Yeah, you referenced there, without naming the situation, the Mohamed Layani Nick Kyrgios situation where he came down from the chair. You mentioned that one of the things Carlos seemed to be doing was not speaking too much, and obviously you've got all the noise in the stadium, and Mohamed actually came out of his chair.
Yeah,
are you more comfortable as an umpire with Carlos's handling in as much as he kept his distance more?
Many times, actually, I've come down from the chair to talk to the players because there was, for different reasons, but mainly because there was a lot of noise in the stadiums, particularly in Davis Cup matches where there's a partisan crowd and all of that. So you want the player to hear what you have to say, and you want to hear what he has to say to you, right? So that's one reason. Another reason is because you want to have a more private conversation out of the microphones, and so nobody, you know, can listen to what you're going to say and the language that the player may be using and so on. So I have no problem with that. And it's not really to compare the two situations, but specifically about the women's final, I think Carlos did his best. I mean, he was calm. He was his body language was very proactive, was opening a door for Serena to express herself. But again, you know, she was using, you know, quite an aggressive body language. So there's only so much you can do when you're in the chair in this situation. So let's not forget, I mean, we're talking about Mohamed and Carlos are probably two of the most renowned, best and most experienced and respected officials. So it's not, we're not talking about the situation that was handled by someone who started, you know, a year ago. No, we're talking about somebody who's done Serena's matches many times, and Grand Slam finals, and Davis Cup, Olympics, and so on, that was using his experience in the best possible way to conduct the match in a smooth way. But umpires, in my view, should not aim to be the center of the attention, but sometimes they are thrown into the spotlight because of the nature of the event. So, and I think that was really the situation on Saturday.
A number of former players, including Billie Jean King, questioned whether the actions taken by Carlos would have been the same if it had been a male player that he was talking to. It seems to be a very difficult situation to actually give any evidence to either side. How could that ever be tested? But for you as an umpire, is it any different handling a match with a female player and a male player?
No, not at all. I mean, the 20 years that I've been in the chair, I've never ever treated anyone different. it didn't matter if it was a male or a female or a father or a mother or a top player or unseated or really. I mean, when you go up in the chair, you do the best you can. You deal different with the players according to their personalities and the moments of the match. It's different to speak to to Andy Roddick in the first game of the match to, you know, then when he's down a set and a break and he's probably, you know, in the heat of the moment, there's a lot of emotions, etc. You know, I'm using the example of Andy because he was somebody who's obviously a very smart guy. He knew the rules and he was testing the umpires. And so you have to adapt to each situation, but you don't make a difference. It's really the situation that makes the difference and you adapt to it, right?
Yeah. Now, you mentioned early on the support, or more importantly, the lack of support of the governing bodies, meaning the USTA and the WTA, who both released quite quick statements to doubt the conduct of Carlos Ramos in the chair that night. And Katrina Adams, the head of the USTA, also went on television and spoke about how it had been mishandled in her view. And the ITF subsequently, who you were the head of officiating for the ITF for a number of years, they subsequently, the following day, released a statement unequivocally backing Carlos Ramos and the decisions that he took. What were your views when you heard the criticism and the responses of the governing bodies?
Yeah, I was surprised how quickly they responded, and I was very sad. I think it was the governing bodies obviously are doing, you know, a lot for the sport, along with the players, with everybody involved in the sport, right? The officials, journalists. I mean, we all for the same cause, you know, for the good of the sport, right? So I think that also comes with responsibility, and the responsibility of the governing bodies, in my view, or one of them, is to stand for what's right for the sport. And officiating is part of the sport, as I say, and it carries a lot of good values, values such as fairness, equality, sportsmanship, respect, and that should not be forgotten. And that was the perfect, in my opinion, that was a perfect opportunity to highlight those values that officiating represents, and to say, yes, why not? I mean, the officiating was actually conducted in a proper way without that doesn't mean that it's an attack on the player. To try and not to attack or to criticize the player's behavior, which is fine if they don't want to do that, that doesn't mean that you have to criticize the officiating. And the main problem I have, David, with that response was a quick response was that it didn't come from an officiating spokesman. It came from obviously the governing bodies, but I don't blame Katrina Adams for not being an expert of officiating. So, but of course, there should be someone in these occasions that takes the time to review, to talk to the umpire, to hear his views and go through the procedures, listen to the players well, take a good read of the situation and then come out with a statement. I think it was necessary to make a statement about the officiating because that was put into question by, you know, not just Serena, but, you know, former players and journalists and stuff. So I think it's fair enough to make a statement, but make it with the right, with all the facts and with the view of an expert. I would not like to go out to the press and particularly nowadays with all the social media, etc., to talk about something that I'm not an expert. I need to have the advice from those experts, right? So I think it was a too quick reaction, and it was very unfortunate that they didn't take the opportunity to support the officiating and make it clear for everyone that it was correct. I mean, the fact that she was fined afterwards, I think it's also an indication that they agreed with the steps taken, right?
Yeah, that is what happened. I know you haven't spoken to Carlos. He's due to umpire at the Davis Cup this weekend. Ironically, United States against Croatia in the semifinals. Right. If you were in his position, having gone through what has happened over the last weekend, Would you be okay umpiring the next weekend?
Yeah, of course. I mean, this is not an easy situation for Carlos. Far from that. But he's very experienced. I think he got the support from his peers, for sure. I mean, he got a lot of support from players, from different stakeholders, but definitely from his peers. And he's experienced enough to know that, hey, you know, life goes on. He has an important Davis Cup semi-final match in Croatia. Two great nations. I mean, it's going to be, as always, in Davis Cup, amazing atmosphere. And I'm sure he's going to be, my advice to him, if I can give him any advice, is to just carry on as normal, you know, low profile, keep it low profile, of course, do the best he can. And it's going to be different players, of course. It's going to be a captain, two captains sitting there. And the rest, the politics, if you want to say, you know, should be dealt, you know, by the right people. I think there should be some discussions. I hope there are some discussions, of course, for the good of officiating to address the issues, because this all controversy, this brings a good opportunity to review the whole mechanism of how do we react to the controversy. How do we deal with that? And so, but that should be dealt by not Carlos himself, but you know, the officiating representatives and the governing bodies, of course.
Do umpires need their own kind of governing body so that they have a spokesperson?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, and of course, I'm aware that there has been some debate over the years. When I was the head of officiating, actually, there was quite some talk about that. In my view, I don't think it's bad if there is some sort of association of umpires. But to be honest with you, I don't think it was much needed when the governing bodies were really, really supporting officiating, you know, back in the years. I feel that perhaps, you know, this situation has highlighted this lack of support.
Why has it changed? Why has it changed, Henrik? I don't understand.
I don't know either. I don't know, and I don't have all the facts right now. But it's clear that it was not the right reaction and response by the governing bodies. So if this is now an opportunity for umpires to come closer and defend their rights in a better way and have a clearer communication with the governing bodies, I think that's good. I have no problem with that. There's been obviously talk about going on strike and this and that. I think this would be bad.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at UH1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. Would you, as an official, want to be able to speak yourself after a match like that? Would you want to be able to have a reporter come on behalf of all the reporters and just say, why did you do what you do straight after a match? Because that doesn't happen now. Would you like it to be able to?
Sometimes you would, but I don't think it would be appropriate, because I think it's important that you have time to review, you know, to reflect on the match, to go to review the procedures, what happened, and together with in this case it was a top umpire with a lot of experience, but it's always good to sort of to contrast your views with somebody who's been watching the match, you know, courtside, or you know, a senior official as well. And to come out with the right statement, and not emotionally. If I do, you know, if I come off a heated match with some, you know, with some situations there, maybe I'm not in the best sort of situations to express myself and send the right message, the right officiating message. So I think it would be good to have somebody that can speak on behalf of the umpires. So a spokesman, a representative. There are, let's not forget, well, back in the days when I was the head of officiating, yes, I did have to comment on different situations about, you know, Grand Slam or Davis Cup or whatever. And of course, I took the time to discuss with the umpire, to discuss with the supervisor who was sitting courtside, or, you know, so you take all that information and then you issue a statement or a comment. But I don't think the umpires individually should go out to the media particularly straight after a match.
Yeah. Final question, Enrique. From your career, I think you were in 4 Grand Slam singles finals, a couple of Olympic finals, Davis Cup finals. You did everything, really. What was the toughest situation you ever had to deal with?
Oof, toughest situation. I could not single out one in particular, but in general, I think the biggest challenges came, you know, when officiating at Davis Cups, because of the crowd element, the partisan crowd element, right? So you not only have to deal with the players and their emotions, also the captains, let's not forget. So you also have to deal with a partisan crowd, and to control, you know, a large crowd, like, I don't know, we've been many times to different places where they're so enthusiastic and so passionate for the sport and for their team. Like, I don't know, I remember, you know, going to Argentina, I was always looking forward to be sent to Argentina, because that would give me the biggest challenge. You kind of develop techniques to control the crowd, but you always learn new ways, right? And I remember I tried to focus on the sort of the leader of the drummer, or the leader of the fan club or whatever, or Maradona, who was sitting there. And then if you controlled Maradona, you know, Diego, then the rest would be fine. So I think it was, you know, jokes apart, it was Davis Cup. No, I could not single out one particular situation. I was lucky enough that all the sort of, you know, all the Grand Slam finals that I umpired run quite smoothly. So, yeah, I was lucky for that. But yeah, in general, is dealing with emotions, right?
Yeah.
So just like Carlos had to deal with that situation because of the emotions of the player.
How do you deal with the ringleader of the noise? You mentioned Diego Maradona. Mm-hmm. How do you do that?
Yeah, it's you know, changing eye contact and trying to be friendly as you can, so they feel that that you're on their side, but at the same time, you know, firm enough to tell them, hey, now it's enough, right? And so if you establish, if you use, you know, your communication skills, your body language, sometimes I was even going, you know, before a match to talk to that group of people and explain, you know, what we were expecting in terms of crowd behavior, you know, that we want this to be a great event, you know, a fun match, but at the same time we want to keep it fair to the opponents, to the other team. So you explain that, and of course there are some people that would not follow your advice, And then that's why you have, again, you know, in this case, the partisan crowd rule, right? So the code of conduct for the teams. And if you have to use it, it's there to use it, right? But yes, you try to establish a good rapport, good communication, so they look at you and they follow your advice. It's not always easy and it's not always successful, but it's a nice challenge, actually.
Fascinating. Enrique, so enjoyable to speak to you. I'm sure our listeners have enjoyed hearing from you. They'll have seen you in the chair all those years. And you're still on the tennis scene now, aren't you? Because you represent players.
Yes, I am. As I joke often, you know, with my former colleagues, I moved to the dark side, right? since it's going to be 5 years now, I've been representing athletes, players, tennis players in particular. I'm a partner at a company called Tenium, based out of Barcelona, and we do manage players like Feliciano Lopez, like Tommy Robredo, Sorana Kirsten, and so many more. And we also run events. So we have the events, the ATP events in Buenos Aires, now coming up in Antwerp, the 250 in Antwerp, and so we have different interests in the sport. So it's a great platform for me to stay involved in the game and with the sport that I love and that I'm passionate about.
Do you miss the chair at all?
No, I don't. But I do have great memories. Obviously, my career and all the emotions. When things like that happen, of course, I sort of rewind my brain and I go back to situations where I faced similar situations. And it's a great memory. I have to say, I enjoyed a really good career. I was quite lucky to have a successful career and. I don't miss it. I guess if I moved to a different job that didn't allow me to travel or to stay connected with the sport and to see my former colleagues, friends, and the whole industry, then I would miss it more. But now I'm really enjoying it in a different role, obviously very close to the players and trying to provide the expertise, the advice that I accumulated over the years, which gives me a great pleasure, particularly with the youngsters. I think it's important that they have someone that has a background in tennis, that understands the game and that everything that goes around. And so that's very enjoyable as well.
Enrique, lovely to speak to you. Thank you very much for joining us here on the Tennis Podcast.
My pleasure. Thank you very much. And have a good one, David. Take care.
So there's Enrique Molina, who is as well placed as just about anybody from an officiating standpoint. Similar experience in his career to that of Carlos Ramos. And, well, make your own minds up. It's a debate that has continued all week long. I don't think it's about to end now, but hopefully Enrique's contribution there will give you some further food for thought. This has been the Tennis Podcast. Catherine and myself, we will be back on Monday with a new show to run through what happened over the Davis Cup weekend. Hopefully it's going to be a cracking weekend. Great Britain are in a tie, playoff tie. Doesn't mean as much as it would have done because of all the changes that the ITF are making to the competition for next year. But still, it'll be interesting. Great to see Leon Smith and all the team and British Tennis and Tennis Scotland putting on a kids' day, which looked fantastic yesterday. 3,000 kids turning up to greet the team. And we'll go over the semi-finals of the Davis Cup as well and be back with you on Monday. Look forward to speaking to you then. We've been executive produced by Melanie Bowes, SSS, tennisballs.com. Our mascot is Charlie the Ferret. Our sponsors are The Manga Club and, of course, Amazon Prime Video UK. And keep an eye on The Telegraph, our partners, and we'll speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.